Before we get to the podcast, I wanted to make sure that you knew that my online knee course with Lenny Macrina is on sale for $200 off this week. If you want to learn exactly how to evaluate and treat the knee, you're going to love our comprehensive course where we cover our clinical examination, exercise progressions, and specific information on ACL, meniscus, patellofemoral, articular cartilage, osteoarthritis, and so much more. Plus, you can earn a ton of CEU credit. The course is on sale this week for $200 off. Head to mikereinold.com/knee for more information and to sign up today. On this episode of the Sports Physical Therapy Podcast, I am joined by Amanda Olson. Amanda is a pelvic health physical therapist and president of the company Intimate Rose, where she offers pelvic health education and products. In this episode, we're going to talk about pelvic health issues in athletes, some of the early signs to keep an eye out for, and how to best collaborate with a specialist in your area so that way you can help your athletes get back in the gym or back to their sport. Welcome to the Sports Physical Therapy Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Reinold from MikeReinold.com. Hey, what's up, Amanda? Welcome to the podcast. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
I've been looking forward to this episode because you and I started talking several months ago about potentially getting you on here. And it's a topic that I openly admit I know just very, very little about. Enough that I know that I need to be friends with people like you, to help me with this, to help me and people like me in this. I totally realize that we probably missed the boat on pelvic health, throughout the years, especially in athletes a little bit, I would say. And I respect that. And I want to learn more and figure out how, people like me that deal with so many athletes can find some early signs, can get them to the right people, that sort of thing. So this should be a really fun episode.
Absolutely.
Cool. All right. Well, why don't we start with this? Because I'm always interested in hearing this. I think, you know, you're a very niche physical therapist, which I love. And I love your niche on pelvic health. Tell me a little bit about, you know, how you got involved. How did you start specializing in this? You know, how can somebody that wants to do the same, like kind of follow in your footsteps a little bit?
It was actually a very adventurous event that happened. I actually went to physical therapy school expressly to specialize in pediatrics.
Oh.
And about a year after I graduated, so I had a doctorate degree in physical therapy.
Yep.
So I was smart enough to know better and old enough to know better.
Yeah.
I found myself in a situation where I was out in nature here in Oregon, and I was with a group of boys who were cliff jumping into the water at 40 feet. And it was one of those things where it's like a spot in the river where it's very deep. It's very still. People have been jumping off of this spot for decades or something. And I am not a thrill seeker. I'm a runner. I much prefer steady as she goes. But I apparently still felt like I needed to keep up with the boys. And when you jump off a cliff at 40 feet, apparently you're supposed to land straight in the water like a pencil.
Right. Right.
And I landed an L.
Oh.
Bottom first at 40 feet. And at 40 feet, water behaved much like concrete.
Right.
Yes. So I annihilated myself very badly.
Oh, man. Bummer.
And yes, it was a big bummer. Had to be like fished out of the water. And I had significant injury to my tailbone, my pelvic floor, my low back. It was a really bad situation. And I'm so lucky because, you know, if I had rotated a little bit or hit a different way, I could be gone for sure.
Right.
So I'm so lucky. And I got out. I was able to walk. And interestingly enough, but by the time I got back to my primary care physician, she recognized immediately that I had significant injury to my pelvic floor and to my pelvis.
Wow.
And she knew right away. And this was very interesting because this was 14 years ago, to refer me to a pelvic health physical therapist.
Mm.
And at the time, in the US, there was a couple hundred, you know,
right.
We as a population of physical therapists have actually been around for roughly 42 years. But as you mentioned, it has been very niche. So people,
right.
Physical therapists have been doing this a long time, but I was so lucky that I had a great one there in my city and she fixed me up. And it was a long process of rehabilitation, but she said, you need to quit pediatrics. You need to do this. We need to get you trained up because there's not enough in the country, and you have the right personality for it. So I did. I went back and recertified, and now this is my passion. You know, this is what I'm here to do.
And which is amazing too. And usually I tell people to follow in the footsteps of their mentors, but I don't think we should follow in your footsteps, right? We don't want to have to jump off a cliff to find our niche in this world. But I think we can learn from the importance of all this from you.
Yes. If you do jump, land straight.
Yes, exactly. Feet first or hands first, or it doesn't matter. They're both the same, right? It doesn't matter. You could pencil or dive. It doesn't matter. But definitely don't go bottom first. Okay.
Yes.
I like it. Okay. All right. So that's a wrap, everybody. Great episode, Amanda. We learned a lot. This. So that's amazing. And I give a lot of credit to not only your physician that you said, but then that person that you found, because they're probably, like you said, a trendsetter to an extent where they said this is an important thing. And then I feel like, just like a lot of other niches, once you see it, you're like, oh my gosh, how do we miss this? And why aren't more people specializing in it? So for me, I think that's like where I get excited when people like you say, this is what I want to do. As a sports PT, I know this is where I feel like I've every now and then I've had that little like spidey sense where you're like, I wonder if I'm missing something on this person. Maybe it's not a sport hernia. Maybe it's not FAI or a groin strain or whatever it may be. Tell me a little bit about that. Like, let's start with that and going over, like, what are some of the most common pelvic floor issues that you see in athletes?
Yeah, interestingly, all of those diagnoses that you just listed actually can be occurring in the person, and they can, as a sequelae or as a secondary effect, be having pelvic floor dysfunction. So, for me, because that is my primary area of practice, in the athletic population, I tend to see a lot of incontinence with exertion. So that could be we call it nulliparous. So somebody that's not been pregnant or had a baby, experiencing incontinence. And so that is actually pretty prevalent. Interestingly enough, there's been several different studies that show a range from anywhere from 28% to 82% of female athletes that have never had a baby are experiencing some degree of incontinence. Wow. And so when you look at that upper ceiling of like 82%, I hope that all of my orthopedic colleagues are going, whoa,
those people are
in my clinic.
That's all of them. Right?
Yes. I mean, it's
almost
point.
All of them. Now, is that sport specific? Like, because, you know, 28 or whatever it was to 82, I mean, that's a large range. Was that, was there a sport? Like, is it like different levels of sports where that's a little bit more prevalent than others?
Yeah, they're seeing high impact. So some of the studies look specifically at running, but a lot of them are broadly looking at high impact. And so in that, they're including gymnasts, runners, basketball players, like lacrosse, jumpers, those kinds of things. So thinking impact. And then across both genders or all the genders, pelvic pain, which can be masquerading as a hip pain or a low back pain. It can be associated with trauma or other injuries, and it can also be associated with stress and how they are guarding against that. And then, of course, in your cyclist population, it can be due to nerve compression with how they are seated and the prolonged time that they're spent on their seat.
Right. And just to clarify, these are things that can happen to all genders, right? This isn't, this isn't a female thing. I know we, you know, postpartum makes this a real issue for females, obviously. But when you said, you know, athletes that were not postpartum, right? Not pregnant, no, postpartum, that means this applies to everybody, right?
Yeah, and certainly can.
And is there, do you see that incidence different between genders? Like, is this more specific to females, or could it be both?
We'll be back after a quick break.
I hope you're enjoying the podcast episode. If you want to learn more from me, please check out my website, mikereinold.com. In addition to all my great articles, videos, and podcast episodes, I have a ton of online CEU courses, as well as my Inner Circle online mentorship and community. Be sure to subscribe to my free newsletter, where I'm always sending you great info and exclusive perks and discounts. Just head to mikereinold.com to get started. Thanks so much.
A lot more of the data is taken on female athletes. There's some new emerging data on the incontinence aspect on the males. Because of the anatomy, it does tend to affect females a little bit more. There's a little bit more opportunity for what we call gapping around the urethra, or just different changes in the dynamics of their pressure system that we see in sport that can result in those symptoms of urine leakage. But there is more work being done to start collecting data on males. And then, of course, in the pain category, we know that it is affecting both.
Right. I can see that too, for sure. And just to clarify, incontinence in a young athlete is abnormal, right?
So yeah. In anyone. Yeah. Right. It's common in the postpartum population, but not normal. And then in the young athlete who's never had surgery, never had a baby, we want to be certainly picking that up and getting that addressed right away.
Right. So do you, I know you're a niche, but for me in the sports setting, at our clinic, we have one of our therapists, Dave Tilley, he's a big gymnastics specialist. He's got, almost exclusive, young female athletes that are gymnasts. When do you start adding this almost to like your intake forms or that sort of thing? Like, when do you start adding this to kind of ask some of these questions? They're coming in, you've never seen them before. Maybe their parents brought them in because they have low back pain or hip pain or a groin strain, right? Whatever. Like, when do you recommend that people in the sports and ortho section start to broach these subjects? And how do we do that in a way that doesn't make the athlete uncomfortable?
I recommend that they do it yesterday. I try to always educate, especially when I am around my ortho friends, to advocating to get it put on the intake forms right away, because a couple of things. In the dynamic, especially between like a male with a young female athlete, it can be difficult to have those conversations. But if it's on the written intake form and they're filling it out privately or with their parents, they can fill in a bubble or they can circle something or they can check yes. And then when you receive that, say, even if you're seeing them for their elbow or their knee or their foot, and you see that there, you can, as part of your therapeutic alliance, when you're taking their medical history, say something to the effect of, I see that you've indicated here that you sometimes leak urine. That can indicate that there might be a problem with your pelvic floor. And I'd like to recommend, in addition to our care that we're doing here, that we get a consult. So you're not quarterbacking that patient out of your clinic. You're still managing them and you're working with a very collaborative pelvic health PT that can be then helping to manage that person. And then, It's just an easy way for an orthopedic PT who may not be comfortable having in-depth conversations to screen. And so there's like four or five questions that are just easy to include on that basic medical intake form. If they are, do you experience loss of urine when you jump, run, sneeze, cough, or play your sport? Do you experience pain with bowel movements or issues having a bowel movement? Do you feel a bulge or a sense of pressure in your pelvic area or in your vagina? And then also, do you have any difficulty having a medical exam with a gynecologist? Because sometimes they don't even bring it up there. So it may be that they're having issues using a tampon or tolerating a speculum. In the older population, like if your athlete is older, not like your 9-year-old gymnast sitting in front of you, it may be that they have pain with intercourse. And that may be not a conversation that you're interested in having as a orthopedic PT, but if it's on there, then you can be working collaboratively with your pelvic PT colleague.
Well, and I think the fact that you even put those on an intake form, I wouldn't be surprised if a young athlete, like in their teens, like they didn't understand that those things were abnormal. So they just thought, oh, that's me. That's what I do. That's maybe everybody's like that. Maybe everybody has a little bit of incontinence here and there. Right. So I think just even putting them on the form, actually might be helpful just for them to realize and open up a conversation that they didn't even realize was part of it.
Absolutely.
So for me, I want to know some of the early signs, right? So incontinence seems like, I don't want to say a late sign, right? But it's like that to me, that's an obvious one. What are some of the more subtle things that we can look for, or maybe the nuances of some pain that you mentioned earlier? What are some of the things that we can do where we say, oh, wait a minute, they said they had hip pain, they said they had back pain, I did my full orthopedic screen of their back or their hip, and it didn't 100% add up. What are some of the other things that we should look for?
If they have a history of constipation, that can indicate a pelvic floor dysfunction, tailbone pain. And then when it comes to the hip, it's often deep hip pain that they can't reach. They can't stretch. Like you put them into a figure four stretch. No, that's not quite it.
Right.
Internally rotate them. Not quite there yet. Getting closer. You know, yeah. And they might point through it through the groin area and say it's deep in there.
Right.
Which then you would need to be screening for the hernia. And they do tend to happen together. Pelvic floor dysfunction and hernia can happen together. Are they saying deep in, but it's not the sciatic nerve. It's not following the piriformis kind of thing. And just if you can imagine as you're doing your evaluation, pelvic floor is literally on the other side of that fascial plane of the piriformis. I think sometimes, especially in PT school, I'm thinking about how the way that my brain created that geography or that anatomy prior to pelvic health education. And you're thinking like, oh, you learn about obturator internus, but it's deep in there. You'll never reach it. No, in pelvic health, we palpate that every day and we can reach it. And it is often a driver of pain. So it's kind of that deep hip pain where you're not able to quite reproduce it on the table. Yeah.
And I think that part is great because I bet you that happens more than people give it credit. They come in, it's in your head, you're like, oh, bam, this is an FAI patient, the femoral acetabular impingement. This is easy, I got this, right? And then you bring them to the test and you're like, oh, wow, nothing produced pain, right? Which, and as the sports PT in this conversation, I can tell you if you're listening, that's weird, right? If you have FAI, it's kind of clear you have FAI, right? Like we can reproduce it with some of our range of motion and internal rotation stuff that Amanda kind of just mentioned there. Again, this is where, you know, I tell our PT students this all the time. I don't like scratching my head. When I scratch my head and something confuses me, we're missing something. We got to take a step back and think outside the box. What are we missing? So remember that orthopedically, if you're looking at something and it doesn't add up, you have to start thinking, okay, that FAI test I just did should have produced some symptoms and it didn't. So let me start working on that. So I guess that's my next question now. Okay, we found somebody. We have some questions. What do you recommend we do first? You kind of alluded to this that we work in collaboration with somebody. How do we find a good person in our area? Do you guys have like an association or something that, you know, like how can people in our area reach out and find some people near them?
Absolutely. So the American Physical Therapy Association's Academy of Pelvic Health has a list serve with pelvic providers throughout the country. And I will say back from 14 years ago to now, there are thousands. We are in every state.
Cool.
And the numbers are growing. There's better awareness. So that is a really reliable place to find them. I have a listserv as well. So if people are listening and they want to find a colleague in their area, I can help connect them by zip code too. So and then I always recommend to like any, like at your state conferences, when you're there, if you're visiting for that or CSM, try to find those providers and team up with them. And a great sports pelvic PT is going to be a tremendous asset. We're very collaborative. We're not going to take your patient away. We're going to be addressing the other side of that fascial plane. You keep working on whatever it is you're addressing. We're going to service that patient and we're going to help them reach their goals.
I think you said it great too before is like, don't just punt, right? I think you kind of alluded to that. Don't just punt, say, oh, this might be something else. No, their hip and their exterior muscles that we're talking about in their hip and their low back, those might need some things too. And that could be something where it's a collaborative effort. So I think that's a really good way of thinking of it. I really think you should take Amanda up on that, by the way. So I'll put some info on her website in the show notes, but you should probably check out the APTA Pelvic Floor Academy or Pelvic Health Academy, I should say. You should probably check that out because I think if you're working with athletes, you should probably have somebody just like you have a shoulder specialist, an elbow specialist, a knee specialist, doctors, chiropractors, massage. I feel like you need to have one of these in your network. And I bet you a lot of my listeners don't, Amanda, unfortunately. So make these connections and let's do this, right? let's shift gears a little bit. Similar note here, but I think a lot of my listeners probably do work with postpartum patients. And a lot of the people I think that listen to me are both fitness and rehab professionals. So I think we have lots of different avenues there. But they're also helping people get back to some advanced level things like working out in the gym, or you know, if they're a runner or playing whatever their sport is. I know this is a broad question because this is so fresh to me, but what are some of the keys to working with postpartum patients that you start with? What are the things you focus on that help somebody like myself that's naive start getting into this?
Absolutely. So depending on how they've come to you, whether they're just coming in because they are postpartum and they are looking for a safe transition back in, or they're coming in with a driving injury, you know, the specific reason, I always recommend that as a clinician, we realize and we help educate this person that every cell in their body changed while they were pregnant, and their body has changed. Their abdominals have changed, their feet have changed. And so in this way, their brain map might not quite match the body that they have at this moment. It's almost like Alice in Wonderland, where they were very tall yesterday and they are very short today. You know, they had changes in their posture and elongation of certain muscles. And,
like, whoa, I can touch my toes. I can never touch my toes.
I can roll over.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah. And so along those lines, their coordination has changed, their timing and their speed of contraction has changed. And we have data now that demonstrates that, especially in their abdominal and trunk muscles, they are highly fatigable.
Right.
And they are also sleepy fatigable. So we want to be providing this just general, almost like giving them, like reminding them to give themselves grace. It's not about like, oh, go easy on yourself, because certainly an athlete does not want to go easy on themselves. They want to be bounced back, you know, yesterday. But it's just reminding them that their body has been through these changes, and that their motor control, their ability to control those these new segments is different. And so from that lens, we want to be doing a complete screen, you know, a complete posture movement screen of their trunk, their hips, looking at their feet, reminding them that oftentimes they have lost some intrinsic muscle control or strength. And that they are going to be wanting to include foot training in their retraining, because that is the base of their contact. And then from there, especially, I think that this return to run, running readiness screen is really practical for all types of athletes. So just doing an overall screen of their form, it's a, you know, a single leg squat, it's a wall squat, looking at their endurance, a step up, and a 2-foot hop. So you're looking at their ability to mitigate force. You're looking at their fatigue ability and symmetry right versus left, which is often crummy, especially in their single leg squat. And then from there, you can go on to design their plan of care or their exercise program. And then, of course, screening for the pelvic floor. But it's, you know, when we're looking at these, what's the magic date as to when they're appropriate? There is no hard and fast date. It's not 6 weeks. It's not 12. It's the person in front of you. And that's where working collaboratively with somebody that specializes can help you drive your exercise prescription and some of that, because they're going to be helping to ensure that there's no other contraindications or like more like yellow flag type things to them participating in exertion.
Yeah, for sure. And call me crazy, it seems like everybody should go through this. I mean, we're talking about athletes. We're talking about people that maybe, you know, weren't feeling great after pregnancy, right? Think about what happens to your body during pregnancy, right? You have a lot of orthopedic things you got to get back to. It's crazy that we just say like, oh yeah, no, I'll come back, right? Without working with somebody. Isn't that crazy?
Yes, very.
So how many people in your practice come to you without any issues? They give birth and they say, you know, I know that just that really changed me. And I want to do the best I can. How many people do you work with like that versus people that are coming because they have persistent back pain or something like that?
I would say roughly 10%. You know, it's the ones that already know what I do, and they just want to be doing the best they can, or they recognize, right, you know, in countries like France, every woman gets 12 visits of pelvic health physiotherapy provided under their system.
Wow.
To they call it perineal re-education. And that's exactly
great.
What it is.
Right. Yeah. So, that's great.
Yes. So there's people that are recognizing that and that are, you know, wanting it so that they can either mitigate any forces or really address any smaller things that they're feeling.
It just seems like a no-brainer. And we haven't even talked about a C-section. I can't even imagine you take all that plus then you disrupt your abdominal wall. I mean, like I can only imagine. So it sounds like we need more awareness. We need more awareness in this country. But why aren't doctors like telling their patients to do this? Why aren't primary cares or OBGYNs, why aren't they saying like, hey, you know, by the way, after you give pregnancy, like you should go see this person and help you get back on your feet faster. Why isn't that a thing in the United States?
You know, we are working on it. I have seen a vast improvement in the last 14 years. And I will say this younger generation of physicians are doing it.
No, that's
they
good.
You know, when I go to national conferences where physicians are present, it's that younger, newer generation, fresh out of residency to roughly, you know, 5-10 years out that are saying, oh, yeah, we have a whole team of public health physical therapists. We
That's
send
great.
Our patients there. And I think from their perspective, too, they are looking at it from their particular lens. And if they're not aware, it's like we see what we look for. We look
right.
for what we know. If they're not aware yet, that's our fault as physical therapists, and we are working on it. You know, we
right.
are working to raise awareness. And I think that it worked in that younger generation, changing practice patterns of some of the set in their ways. Physicians can be more challenging, but it's when we get one or two in and they see the difference. It's like anything, you know, when you're new in town as a physical therapist and you're having to prove yourself, Send me the one that is struggling. Send me the one that's incontinent or having pain and can't sit. Send me them and I will help them. And then they see the results and that's ingrained in their head when we're helping
sure.
their patients. That makes a difference.
Yeah, I can see that making a lasting impression, and then that'll probably change their practice for forever once they go through a tough one. You know, so, well, hopefully at least so.
Yeah.
Awesome. So, all right. So we need more awareness. We know that you need to find a specialist in your area. You need to, I would at least just say for people listening, you need to have this on your radar. And I think that's the most important thing, because this wasn't something that I thought of earlier in my career, but I had several patients, you know, and I think CrossFit, as that gained popularity like 10 years ago or so, and it got really, really popular, I think we started seeing more people in our clinics with this, because it became more obvious, maybe because they were doing so much more activities. But I definitely realized that this is something that I wanted to get better at, or at least understand, so I can collaborate. And that's really why I wanted you to come share this with us, Amanda. So thank you so much for taking time out to do this. This was awesome. Before I let you go, gotta have our high five segment at the end, where five quick questions, five quick answers. Very curious here, but I like hearing how people think. I like their brains, right? And obviously you're smart, so I want to hear a little bit. But first question, what are you currently working on for your own professional development? I know you educate a lot of others. What are you doing?
I am brushing up on some of the newer data. So over the pandemic, all of our amazing colleagues that were looking at public health and running produced a ton of new literature. Going through and brushing up on that, we published a paper in April on that subject and are looking at doing another Delphi shortly that is international. So it's a lot of data there. But another one that I am having to reintegrate into my practice is this change in IT band from friction syndrome to, we're calling it compression now.
Compression, yes. Friction. I mean, we'll change yes. it again in 10 years. It is what it is, but
yes.
sure.
Yes. So I'm pouring back through that literature as well and changing, you know, because I teach a 2-day course on pelvic floor dysfunction in runners, and it's pertinent because of the role of the hips. So
right.
I'm having to reacquaint my brain with some changes in understanding of the mechanics.
Exactly. Well said. I like that. What's one thing that you've recently changed your mind about?
I would say 2-minute plank test. I still like it, because I do like pushing patients into fatigable states in service of especially running. But less as a diagnostic tool, more as a training tool that they can do while they're, you know, maybe having to do other things with their brain, especially in the postpartum population. They're oftentimes having to multitask. So I feel like that's kind of an easy one, but not using it to necessarily like diagnose, but more as just a training tool.
I like that. That's a good one. What is your favorite piece of advice that you love to give your students?
Well, I think the most pertinent is that what you are learning currently is not going to be how you practice in 3 years. I mean, it's not even five anymore. It's like turn and burn.
Right, exactly. That's great. So keep an open mind. And you know, I it's funny you say that because that is one of the areas I see so many young professionals like dig in on their opinions like really hard, really fast. And you know, people like us, we just watch on Instagram. You're like, they're going to regret that post in 3 years. You know, that was a little aggressive, but nice. I like it. What's coming up next for you?
Working on the Delpy with Shefali Christopher and Rita Deering and an international team of amazing physios in the running and pelvic health space. So we're working on creating some recommendations for postpartum return to fitness and running, and CSM. CSM's nice. Coming up in like, 5 weeks, 6 weeks?
Yeah, it's so close that I'll probably publish this podcast well after. But yes, I like that. Maybe it'll be next CSM that you're talking about in Boston.
Yes. Are we coming your way?
We're coming to Boston in February. It makes perfect sense. Like, I don't even want to be in Boston in February. But yes, it should be good. Hopefully we'll have a good turnout.
And we're all going to be stuck there. There's no flights come and go out of Boston in February.
There's a solid chance. I'll leave it at that, that there's a solid chance you don't get home or to the meeting on time. But we'll just leave it at that. That's awesome. Well, Amanda, how can people find out more about you? Tell me like where you like to collaborate with people. Is it Twitter, Instagram, your website? What's the best place to find more info from you?
I'm on all those places. I love Instagram. So I'm A. Olson, DPT, and Intimate Rose, which is my company. And for website, the Intimate Rose website, I have hundreds of videos and blog articles and free education for patients and providers alike on every subject in pelvic health under the sun.
Awesome. That's great. Yeah. Really appreciate you taking some time out today and just appreciate all you do for this niche and combining it with sports, because I think that's what's really neat about what you're doing right now. So appreciate that and all your insight. And thank you so much for coming on the podcast today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcast. And please share this with your friends to help spread the word. It would really mean so much to me. Please check out all my online courses, articles, newsletter, and more at mikerano.com. There's always a ton of great perks for my newsletter subscribers. And also be sure to search for my other podcast, The Ask Mike Reinold Show, where my team of physical therapists, strength coaches, and I answer your questions. See you on the next episode.